Hi,
we're North Carolina Student Council, and you're listening to Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, guys, and welcome to the city. And welcome to Outside the Loop Radio. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am your host, Mike Steven. This is show number 388 right here on WLUW Chicago. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And of course, I'm broadcasting from the OTL Bunker Studios somewhere deep underground in Chicago. Outside the Loop Radio .com is this show's website, so be sure to check that out. Also, say hello on Facebook and on Twitter. That handle is at Outside the Loop. And you can download this show through iTunes as a podcast to take it with you on the go. Boy, we have a ton of stuff to do on this week's show. Coming up in just a bit, we get an analysis of the information being presented on CNN's Chicagoland series. Before that, on last week's show, I played a clip of Team Inglewood's Louder Than a Bomb Youth Poetry Slam performance that slammed Mayor Emanuel. We hear from one of the coaches of that team. But first, Mick Dumke is a great political reporter here in the city. And soon, you'll be able to see him on stage at the Hideout. We get the details right now. The local music that I'm featuring on this week's show comes from the band Cousin Dud. CousinDud.com is their website. They just played a big show at the Empty Bottle last weekend. They've got some rock and roll. So let's hear music from Cousin Dud. This is Outside the Loop Radio. I'm your host, Mike Steven, right here on WLUW. The Hideout is known for hosting great musical performances, but on Tuesday, April 1st, the Hideout will get a little political. Starting then, and also the following first Tuesdays of the month, you can catch an event called First Tuesdays, hosted by the Chicago Readers, Ben Jarofsky and Mick Dumke, two of the greatest reporters we have here in Chicago. Mick Dumke is a senior writer at The Reader. He is on the phone with us to talk about this really cool series that's coming up. Mick, how are you, man?
I'm good. Good to talk to you again, Mike.
All I have to say to you is welcome to showbiz, my friend. You're hosting a show. And this is...
I thought it was about time to launch my showbiz career. So, yeah, here we go, man.
Yeah, man, you're about to just see how exciting and glamorous it can be. This is really cool, though. I'm really excited for you guys. You and Ben Jarofsky, like I said, have written so much about politics and just everything having to do with Chicago. You guys now are starting this event called First Tuesday. Tell us what this show is. What's the format?
Well, this format is basically, it's going to be like a political roundtable with beer. we were approached by some of the folks at the Hideout, which is, you know, always been one of my favorite bars in the city anyway. Sure. And they basically were like, you know, Tim Tootin, one of the owners, basically said, you know that old show called The Sports Writers? We had a bunch of, you know, sports reporters sitting around chomping down cigars, and they talk about the news and issues of the day. And we said, of course, we love that show. And he said, we'd like to do that with politics. We'd like you guys to give it a shot. And so we said, absolutely, sign us up, we're in.
Yeah.
So the idea, Mike, is just to kind of sit around and have, you know, talk about some real issues, but have a lot of fun doing it. And so the idea would be we're going to have, you know, a number of guests, anywhere from, you know, I guess zero to a handful of guests each week or each month. And then we'll be right in the middle of a live audience that, you know, in some way will be participating, like throwing out answers, heckling us, you know, throwing their undergarments, you know, excited fans, whatever works, you know. And so it sounds like a good time, and hopefully we'll get some of the word out about, like you said, what things are actually going on in Chicago at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I really admire that. Any sort of outlet or event that provides a forum for people, the public, to come to talk about these issues that are really very important. Politics is an important thing in Chicago and how that affects all of us as citizens. And to have you guys up there who know so much about the political system and structure and the complex nature of politics in Chicago, that's a great thing. But also to get these other guests up on stage. I know the first one, again, it's on April 1st, the first edition of First Tuesdays at the Hideout. You are welcoming a few aldermen. You've got Alderman Wagaspack, Alderman Moreno, and here is the kicker, Alderman Dick Mell. How the heck did you land Dick Mell?
Well, we're still, you know, hoping that he actually does show up. He's assured us he would. If you're out there listening, Alderman Mell, we're teasing you. Of course, we know you're going to be there. But no, we reached out to him, got some contact information for him. Of course, he has heard from us a number of times through the years. Often, he doesn't want to hear from us. But in this instance, you know, I sent him messages virtually every way, including carrier pigeon, saying, we're doing this thing. We think it'd be a lot of fun to have you up there. We're certainly going to ask you questions, but, you know, this isn't trying to put you on the hot seat and grill you about everything. We just want to have a good time while talking to politics, and, you know, we're happy to buy you some beer. And so we actually didn't hear from him for a little while, so we kind of moved on. And then all of a sudden I got a call from him, Mike, and he said, Mick, let's have a good time on April 1st.
Wow.
And so he said he was way into it, and you know, that his honorarium was very modest. He said Ben Jarofsky has to stop being an a-hole, and if that happens, then he'll be happy. And I told him I could not guarantee that by any means, but I think he's going to come anyway. So
that's good.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It should be a good time, and it's a lively group there. So
absolutely, and you know, you hit on it right there. You and Ben have reputations for being very tough reporters. You guys get the stories and you delve into the details. Do you think that's going to hinder maybe you guys getting some guests? Because like you said, it's not often that politicians look at the phone and say, oh, great, Ben Jarofsky's calling. Or, oh, hey, there's Mick Dumke. I can't wait to talk to him, especially in Chicago. Do you guys think that's going to be an issue?
I'm sure it will. And, you know, our day jobs, obviously, are as reporters, and you know, that comes first. But you know, we're really not worrying about that. We're trying to tell people, like, look, this is an opportunity for you to actually come and have a good time. And again, we hope and we think, we expect to touch on some serious issues and to ask some tough questions here and there. But this is an open forum. They can ask us tough questions too, and
sure,
and interact with the audience. So, you know, I think honestly, smart politicians and other public figures are going to see it as a good opportunity to show that they're not afraid of being out with the people. They have a sense of humor that they can go out there and talk about serious things, but also have a good time. And we'll all toast each other at the end and say, thanks for being a part of this. So we really do see it as fun and collegial at the same time that we're trying to talk about, you know, public policy.
Yeah. And I think you're going to get some good crowds out there because the Hideout, like you said, is a great place. But also, I think a lot of people in Chicago are concerned about the future of the city, what's happening right now. And of course, our elected officials, you know, these people constantly get voted in, and there is a growing movement for accountability for some of these individuals. I also want to talk about what you and Ben have running in the Chicago Reader this week. This is a parking meter deal update, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Mike, I think you and I have been talking on this show about the parking meter deal for, what, 5+ years
yeah,
now?
Absolutely.
And, you know, the thing is, there's 70 more years of this deal, so we'll probably talk about it again. But
right.
Yeah, Ben and I this week have a little update on the latest. People may have heard there's a little news a week or two ago. Mayor Emanuel announced that the deal that he renegotiated last year, folks will remember, he sort of tweaked the meter deal, and the city council approved it about a year ago. And so he recently announced that he saved Chicago drivers a couple of million bucks at the minimum through some of the new terms. And specifically, it's the meter hours were extended through most of the city in return for free Sunday parking in a lot of parts of the city. And the mayor is saying that that has saved drivers a little bit of money. Essentially, we're questioning those claims. We just don't think that the evidence that what Mayor Randall presented doesn't amount to evidence. That's really the bottom line. And so we want to see more. We have questions about the way he came up with this deal. And really, the bottom line, Mike, is that we're still feeding tens of millions of dollars into a meter system that, you know, goes straight into the pockets of wealthy investors around the world. So even if a couple million dollars less, according to the mayor's calculations, were fed in, the meter company is still increasing its revenues over time. So the bottom line is we continue to send more money to these investors who have control, essentially, of our streets in Chicago.
Hmm. Well, check out the story in this week's Chicago Reader and online, chicagoreader.com. Mick, I am very excited for the First Tuesdays series at the Hideout at 1354 West Wabansia, and I look forward to when you get Mayor Emanuel himself to come to the event. That will be, a throwdown, just awesome, no holds bar event. I'm sure that will be coming up, for the next one, right? There's no problem. You can easily get him.
Well, he's waiting by the phone for our invitation. So, it has to happen sometime soon. So, yeah, we'll get everybody we can. And, Mike, at some point in time, I hope you're going to join us on there, too. So thanks for the opportunity to talk about it. And keep rocking, man. Your show is always great.
Hey, Mick, I appreciate it. Mick Dumke is a senior writer at the Chicago Reader. Read what he's doing. Mick, as always, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, Mike. She can get what she wants. She just made the payments. And I learned it the hard way when they showed up to take it off.
You are listening to Outside the Loop Radio right here on Chicago Sound Alliance, 88.7 WLUW. I'm your host, Mike Steven. This is show number 388, and right now we are hearing the local music from Cousin Dud. You can check him out online, cousindud.com. Each week, I love to feature your local music, so if you have any, just go ahead and send me what you got. I will play your songs on the air, and of course, plug your gigs. Just go to OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. I've got all of my contact info on that website. And I'd love to feature your local music just like I do every week right here on the show. Last week here on Outside the Loop, I talked about the Louder Than a Bomb Youth Poetry Slam semifinals that took place at the Metro recently. And on last week's show, we heard from the team from North Lawndale College Prep. We went behind the scenes with them, but I also played some audio from the Team Inglewood performance. They performed a group piece at the end of the bout at Metro, and it was this really incredible, powerful, moving, pointed critique of Rahm Emanuel. And this performance has gained some traction online over the past few weeks. With us right now to talk about this performance is the poetry coach at Team Inglewood Community Academy. He's also a history teacher there. He is Dave Stieber. Dave, welcome to Outside the Loop.
All right. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Man, I was in the audience that day at the Metro. I saw this performance live. I'm glad I had my recorder going because it was this unbelievably powerful, poignant performance. And I got to ask you, as their coach, how did this piece come to be? Who had the idea for Wreck-It Rahm?
So it's myself, actually, and a couple other coaches to help out. We've had this team now. This is our sixth year of coaching. And so every year, like writing a group piece is one of the most difficult things because you take four poets and you basically have to kind of force them to just sit down and just literally brainstorm for the beginning. So this process kind of starts in January, I'd say early January, and you just literally brainstorm every idea that you can think of, that they can think of. And just chart all out. And so you've got this, list of 50 things that just kind of mean nothing. And then so we kind of looked and saw themes, and a lot of their stuff that they were talking about was stuff that impacts them, you know, living in Inglewood and on the south side of Chicago. And they talked about violence. They talked about their schools being closed. They talked about all sorts of stuff, crime, you know, and then not more like positive, like, you know, high school stuff, boys, girls, all that kind of stuff too. And so we just come up with this huge list, and we're like, all right, what do we really want to talk about? And they just kind of narrow it down. And then they thought about the theme of Louder Than a Bomb this year, which was freedom and education. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, what's that mean to you guys? And so they started talking about, you know, what their schools kind of need more of, what our school needs more of. Just by having traveled to other schools, they've seen, you know, what other schools have or what they don't have, et cetera, et cetera. And so just kind of worked from there. And it was just literally like a long process that took from like early January up until mid to late February, just about a week before our first bout. We kind of got it all right, this is it, let's memorize it, and just kind of went from there. And so it was over about a month and a half process to do this. It was student led. I mean, like us, our role as a coach is just like, okay, here's your idea, what's that mean to you? And just kind of questions like that to kind of flush it out. And as the process went along, like I personally am not a big fan of the mayor, but they didn't know that at the start. As it right. went along, I was like, all right, awesome. You know, I was like, this is awesome. And I personally loved it. But like, as a teacher, you're always like, let's just ask questions to get them to think about what they want to do and what they want to write about. So that's kind of the long answer of how this process came about.
You know, it's interesting. I think that when we often generalize about high school students, maybe we're not thinking that they're in political spheres that much, or they have such a strong opinion of politicians. But man, when you listen to this performance, there is, like I said, this criticism of Rahm Emanuel and how he's handling Chicago.
It's funny, because there's not enough money for our schools, but it's enough to build that new Chicago. But that new Chicago is not for us. The paint is thinning, and so is our patience.
Is that something that is really at the forefront of their minds? Are they pinning a lot of the problems in the neighborhood on Rahm Emanuel?
I mean, I think they can kind of look around, you know, I mean, there's been problems in the Inglewood neighborhood for before Rahm, right? But like, they can look at a lot that's been going on, and then we're like, okay, so all your elementary school is closed. Okay, let's mm-hmm. talk about that. Let's figure that out. Let's research this. Okay, there's not enough money. We had like half a nurse for half a day on Fridays last year. I'm not even sure when she's there this year. I mean, just simple things like counselors have been cut, and you know, technology doesn't work, and all these things. And so we're like, all right, what's going on? What's really happening here? And so, all right, let's just start researching what's going on, what's been written about some of this stuff. And so they'd look up school closing, so they look up school funding, and they just came across articles. Like, we're just in the computer lab for a couple of days during practice, not even writing, just like, all right, Google this. All right, you found that? Check this out. See what yeah. you can find. You know, and so just all the stuff that they were coming across, and then you just, you know, you kind of have to kind of go through it from there. So, I mean, they know what's going on. It's just kind of like getting them focused on, okay, why, and all right, where can you go to figure this out a little bit more?
You know, I said that there is this traction that has been gained by the recordings that have surfaced online. I mean, the kids are they got to feel like they're, you know, kind of famous, a little bit of some rock star action going on, because they really made a statement. I know CBS picked it up, The Reader picked it yeah. up. People really gave it a spotlight and were talking about it, and they got some conversation going.
I just checked it a little while ago. It's got 55,000 views on YouTube, which is just wow. mind blowing. You know, I mean, it's crazy. Like, you know, when we posted it the night of semifinals, it was Saturday the 8th, and it was, I think I posted it like 10:30 at night. And then the next morning I'm like, wow, it's got like 500 views or something like that. And then it just started going, and it was like Huffington Post posted it, took a jump, and then The Reader, and then CBS. And now it's just like taken off, and it's just, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the kids are, they're pretty hilarious with it. Some of them are like, wow, this is amazing. It's so cool. Other ones are like, all right, let's just stay humble. Let's have people see this. We want people to see this, you know? And so it's just this mix of like being a high school kid of like kind of what it does and doesn't do. And so they're, you know, everyone's excited, but it's also like, all right, what's the reason that they wrote this poem? And, you know, and some of them are the older ones, that we have like a senior, two juniors and a sophomore. And so the mm-hmm. older ones are like, we wrote this because we want some change. And the sophomore is like, we wrote this because it's yeah, we want that, but it's pretty cool that we're, you know, getting noticed for this too, you know? So it's just this big mix of kind of it all, which is what yeah. high school kids are all about, you know?
Absolutely. Now I have to ask you, it's out there online. I even put it out there and I tweeted Mayor Emanuel. I know that other people have tweeted Mayor Emanuel with this performance. I just have to ask, have you heard from Mayor Emanuel at all?
So there's something kind of in the works, not with the mayor, but we have been contacted through somebody else by the mayor's office. And so there's tentatively like some sort of possibly lunch or dinner scheduled. We don't know the details. It's pretty vague right now. And I don't even know if I'm really supposed to be saying this yet. but yeah, so there has been initial contact. We haven't been contacted. Our school hasn't been contacted, but somebody we know at Young Chicago Authors has been contacted, and so we're kind of seeing what that's going to go or do. And
right,
so we'll see.
Yeah, I got to think, if you're the mayor, and I talked about this on last week's show, that perception is out there that your job performance is not being stellar right now, and there are a lot of problems with Chicago. And I think that if you're the mayor, if you're any elected official, you take that seriously, because these kids are bright, they have incredible talent, and they're living these lives that reporters talk about, other people just talk about. They are the ones that are living these lives, and I think that any politician, it would serve them to listen to these people.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I mean, like, you were there and you heard, all these poets sharing their stories. And, as a politician, that's what you hope politicians do, that they listen to their constituents and listen to these people and these kids and, the city that's saying these things. And so this, Young Chicago Authors and Louder Than Bomb is just an amazing venue for just hearing stories from all over the city and the Chicago area, just of youth, thousands of youth just sharing their story. And so when a couple of things really take off and, kind of go from there, you just really hope people are listening, like you said. So I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, I will put the performance up at OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. It is great. I know you're proud of the kids. You should be. And it's a great performance. And good luck with everything in the future. Dave Stieber is a poetry coach at Team Inglewood Community Academy. He's also a history teacher there. Dave, thanks for talking to us here on Outside the Loop.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Have you been watching CNN's documentary series on our city? It's called Chicagoland, and the show has behind-the-scenes access to the mayor and other high-level local officials. It's also full of a lot of statistics and other information. Tracy Siska is the executive director of the Chicago Justice Project, and that organization has a few issues with what was presented and how it was presented. Tracy Siska joins us here on the phone. Tracy, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me, sir.
So this show, Chicagoland, it's been getting a lot of publicity. It's been promoted pretty heavily. At the Chicago Justice Project, like I said, you guys have some issues, specifically talking about the amount of information that's presented in this series and how that information basically goes unchallenged. Tell us about that.
It would be hard for any series to try to sum up an entire city in just like 6 or 7 hours. But specifically what this one does is definitely comes from a perspective that Chicago has a lot of problems and it needs a very tough mayor to solve them all. Without ever going back and putting in some context into, how these problems were created and who's at fault for creating them. One of the biggest ones was this number that comes out about the Chicago Public Schools being $1 billion in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And while that is a number that Chicago Public Schools and the mayor's office has repeatedly espoused as being the reason for the school closings, the reality is that number has been debunked many, many times by both Catalyst, which is a magazine that strictly covers the school, and by WBEZ's reporting here in Chicago, locally in Chicago. That number has been totally debunked and has no validity whatsoever, but that is definitely the number that Chicagoland has come from in trying to give an excuse in the past for the mayor needing to close schools.
It's interesting you talk about the context issue, and that was something that struck me. The series starts and we kind of jump right into the whole teachers' strike, because they were filming during the time leading up to the Chicago Teachers Union strike last year. And all of a sudden, here's the problem. But like you said, there's no explanation really of how we got here. There's no thorough understanding of the problem, it, as you say, is presented as, here's the problem, now we need somebody else to come in and fix it.
Right, exactly. And there's been so much good reporting around the reasons for the so-called deficit. The main issue around the deficit for Chicago Public Schools is what's called tax increment financing districts, or TIF districts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically an off-the-books account for the mayor to build parks or do whatever he wants with the money, subsidize the Paul Stadium. At least 50 cents, some officials make 54% of every dollar that goes in that TIF fund should have gone to the schools. And this is a process that's been going on for 20 years. And that account anywhere, depending on the market, takes in anywhere from $300 to $500 million a year. So 50% of that should go to the schools every year over the last 20 to 25 years. It's not like this deficit just creeps up upon us because of bad management of the school books. This is a deliberate attempt, and that was not something that CNN decided to share. And it's obvious right from the start when you saw the promos, the fact that they had behind-the-scenes access to the mayor, and they rode in the mayor's car, and they're in the mayor's office, and they're in the superintendent's car, and they're in his office, you knew right away that there wasn't going to be a whole lot of independent reporting though.
Yeah, you questioned the lack of independent journalism that's part of CNN's Chicagoland series. You also mentioned that journalist Mark Conkle is involved with this, and you have some issues with him. He narrates the thing, as a matter of fact, but you criticized him on your website, chicagojustice.org. What issue do you have with Mark Conkle being involved in this?
Well, you know, he's done a fair amount of reporting on criminal justice matters, which is definitely our specialty, and most of his reporting is very, very shallow. He won a Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago while working at the Sun-Times, and he wrote a multi-story piece about the problem in underserved communities and the reality of violence, and the fact, the crux of his story was that the biggest problem confronting underserved communities isn't the lack of resources, it's the fact that no one will testify against gang members when they do bad things. So it's basically blaming the community. And if you take only the narrowest, shallowest view of going on, you come up to that. You come up with that solution. And that's kind of a lot of how his reporting has been. And there's no doubt this is how Chicagoland is, but it's very murky. No one can really get an answer to what his role is besides just a narrator. Some say he's a narrator. I've seen other places call him one of the producers. I've also seen one of the people call him in the New York Times, I believe, that much of this is actually just his reporting. So it's very kind of convoluted about who's doing what and who's responsible for what.
You know, this whole series is interesting because, again, when I watched it, again, these issues that struck me of how we're not really, at least the audience, if you're, let's say you're in, I don't know, you know, Maine or something, and you're watching this on CNN and you're getting thrown into everything that's happening here in Chicago, you don't quite get the full picture. And that is something that I think has been an issue when we talk about violence in our city. Yes, we've had violence problems, but what gets coverage across the nation isn't how do we fix that? How do we go into the neighborhoods and talk to members of the community and fund programs that help the neighborhoods? It's how many people have gotten killed, how many gangs there are in Chicago, what those gangs are doing, and all the bad things around it. And I think that in a way, although this series looks really slick and is produced well, there is a dearth of information that really doesn't serve the audience well. In fact, it serves to probably enhance stereotypes that people have about Chicago, that we've got a lot of violence issues, we've got union problems here, and their whole education system is up for grabs. And that's sort of what you're getting at through your post on chicagojustice.org.
Yeah, you said two great things that I want to reiterate and put more of a context around. One is that there's just this whole dearth of information. And that's a lot of how the criminal justice reporting is in Chicago, and then when people look into Chicago nationwide about Chicago, which is, it's more about voyeurism than it is about looking at the roots of problems and what those solutions might be. It's about voyeurism. There's no greater example of this of them going into Fenger High School. Fenger is a school which is 4 years ago had a homicide of Darian Albert.
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered off the school grounds because of in-school problems. Well, now they turned it around 4 years later because after that, right before that murder, the year before, they became a turnaround school. So the city flooded it with money. So, of course, things are turning around, and they're talking about the heroic efforts the principal is doing, which is no doubt she's doing great things. Two little context things that are missing, though. One is that principal came in, whether it was her or the school board, fired about 75% of the staff. So Darian Albert's murder actually happened in part because Sanger got an influx of new students, which means across gang lines, and no one at the high school knew about that or knew how to handle it or knew anything about gang ties or knew anyone from the school because the vast majority of their staff was brand new. That did play a role in Darian Albert's death. Secondly, the turnaround can be 100% drawn to the fact that we have flooded them with resources. At the end of this school year right now, I believe, Fenger will lose those resources. And they talk a little about it, well, what's going to happen? Well, what do you mean is going to happen? If we know 100% that there's a direct correlation between this school turning around and a flooding of resources, why would we ever think of taking the resources away? There's the solution. We have the solution to CPS. It's not about closing schools. It's about flooding them with money. But this is not something that makes the agenda. Even though it's staring them in the face in this documentary, that's off the table. And what you see at the end of the last episode is that principal going to meet some really rich restaurateur in the Loop and talking about fundraising for her school from rich people because they're not going to have the resources from the city to keep the staffing they need to make the school safe and productive for kids. That's obscene. We have principals in public school begging rich people for money because we have a system here in Chicago where we just don't put the resources we need in. It's sad.
Yeah, it really is. And I will link up to what you wrote on ChicagoJustice.org, your analysis of CNN's documentary series called Chicagoland. It's a very interesting read what you have put up there, Tracy. Tracy Siska is the executive director of the Chicago Justice Project. Tracy, as always, thanks for talking to us here on Outside the Loop, and thanks for all of your continued work here in Chicago.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop Radio, show number 388 is in the books, as I like to say. I'm your host, Mike Steven. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. And again, thanks to all of my guests, Tracy Siska, who is the executive director of the Chicago Justice Project. Thanks also to Dave Stieber, who is a history teacher and poetry coach at Team Inglewood Community Academy. He was talking to us about his team's great performance at the Louder Than a Bomb 2014 semifinal bout that gained them some local popularity. And thanks to the Reader's Mick Dumke. He is a senior writer at the Chicago Reader, and he is a co-host of the First Tuesday show that will be happening at the Hideout on the first Tuesday of every month starting April 1st. Check him out online, chicagoreader.com. Outside the Loop Radio is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine, airing every Thursday morning at 10. Check out OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. Copyright 2014 Albert Michaels Productions. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 88.7 WLUW Chicago.